Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 64 of season 7 of Movie Around Minute, daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Lisa Leahy of the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be working our way through the week.
Yeah, seriously, me too. Enjoying myself.
Definitely.
So minute 64 begins with John hearing a ringing phone and ends with Simon trying to calm Targo down. So yesterday we ended things with John and Zeus becoming very jubilant as they were able to finally figure out this little riddle that Lisa has been waiting 3 years to tell us about.
Yes.
And Lisa did a nice job of explaining to us before.
Thank you.
Before we had to crawl through the way that the script describes it.
Yes. You
know, which it could have done it a little more succinct way, which is probably why they changed it for the movie.
That's it. And even the movie didn't explain it super well because I got confused and I needed a pause button and I didn't get one.
Because in the movie theaters they don't have pause buttons.
No, they don't. But you know what? Some of the best movies are the ones that I need pause buttons for because it means I'm going to watch them again and again.
Okay, so then the second time you watch them, you can use the pause button.
Correct.
You know, I guess the idea is that the first time you're supposed to try to figure it out on your own, and the second time...
Well, either that or like the... most people probably just be like, oh, I'll think about it later. Me, I couldn't let go of it at the moment.
Okay. I can understand that. Okay, so... the phone rings as this minute begins.
Yes.
And then John answers it, which again goes back to the whole question of where is this phone that we were talking about the other day also.
I know, right?
Were you able to identify the phone again, or is it the same as last time that it's just a speakerphone?
Well, no, he picks it up, doesn't he? He's got a phone on him.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what phone is he on?
Well, he's on like a cell phone, like a car phone thing. So there must have been like a cradle or something.
But do you think he's on a phone that was in the briefcase, or is he on the phone that Cobb gave him when he left him?
Oh God, it's got to be. I think it's the phone that's in the briefcase.
Yes, it is, because the one that Cobb gave him is much bulkier. Which yeah. We talked about a few weeks ago, how silly it was that Cobb gave him a cell phone, because you know. If Simon were to call Cobb, he would call on his cell phone.
Correct.
And for John to get through now to Cobb, it's a little more difficult because how do you get through to somebody if you have their phone?
Exactly. That too.
Yeah, so
but I mean, he's got to be one who manages variables, so it's got to be a phone that he gave him.
Correct. So we'll just have to wait and see. So then we hear on the other side of the phone, Simon says, congratulations. You're still alive. So once again, it goes back to the idea that we were talking about earlier in the week that Simon is privy to some type of technology from that time mm-hmm. that allows him to have his phone know when the bomb has been deactivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows. He's got some sort of tracker. He's aware of what's going on.
Completely. And then John goes, huh?
In his classy Simon, John way. Huh?
That's right. That's right. And Simon then repeats himself and goes, congratulations. And John goes, yeah, we did it.
What,
you surprised me again, John. This is becoming an ugly habit. Yeah, well, I don't have the time right now, Simon. Listen, deal's a deal. Where's the school bomb? On the contrary.
I hate that moment. Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
I hate that moment. I hate that John goes, like, he's yelling into this phone. He's in a public place, and he goes, where's the school bomb? People around him are not going to calmly hear that and go, oh, what an interesting conversation. You can't say school bomb. Somebody That's there right. was not thinking, because that moment would never go by. Somebody would have heard it. It would have created a panic. I'm not. See, you're talking about the technology. That's the moment I struggle with.
Okay, I completely agree with you on that. I understand the issue there.
Yeah. I understand exposition. We have to go from one bomb to another bomb. You have to be specific about which bomb we're concerned with. But
right.
In real life, that would have been bad.
Correct. But what I like about the way that they do it in this movie is the fact that, you know, we talked about yesterday in the script that people were starting to gather around them. There's nobody around them. You know, I'm not saying that John is allowed to say, you know, bomb on bus or bomb in park or whatever it is, you know, but or bomb in school. But yep. on true. The other hand, you know, the people are all in the dog park behind him. Nobody can hear him. Nobody's paying any attention.
True.
And I love the way that Simon is just calmly pacing back and forth as he's talking. And we see all these little, small little Ellen Ripley contraptions, you know, yep. walking around carrying all the gold.
Yep. And he's very calm because he's got plenty of time. And I don't know what it is. I don't know when Jeremy Irons became some sort of sex symbol or something, but him at like all, you know, decked out and, you know, tank top and guns out and everything. It's like, when did this happen exactly? Because you watch these other movies, this movie. Is not him. This is not this film.
This is not Klaus von Bülow, right?
True.
It's very weird the way they do it, but oh well.
Yeah, I'm in.
They wanted to make him. They wanted to make him a little bit more fierce physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's actually somewhat of a combination of the two villains from the last two movies, because true. Stuart was, you know, was the physical villain, and Hans was the intellectual, and he's both.
Correct. Very true.
So maybe that's part of the whole idea here. And so he continues talking, and he goes, on the contrary, you have lots of time. You have, mm-hmm. and then he looks at his watch, and he goes, 2 hours and 47 minutes precisely. So Lisa, what time is it?
Oh, I don't know.
It's if the bomb is supposed to go off at 3 in the school.
And it's 2 hours and what?
47 minutes.
I don't know. I'm an English teacher.
It's 12:13.
Okay.
12:13.
I would have counted back eventually, but people don't need to listen to me try and do math in my head like that. I can do the jugs. I can't do that kind of basic time math. Not quickly.
Right. Okay.
I'm sorry. It's embarrassing.
That's okay. You don't need to apologize. And then Simon says, plenty of time to test those wits of yours.
Yes.
And then John screams again into the phone and goes, hey, listen, jerk off. Let me tell you something. I got a bad fucking hangover, all right. Now, why should Simon care that John has a hangover?
Like, he wants him to get on with it.
No, but again, like, why should he care? Who cares?
No. It's just a way of keeping things going, yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes, and I'm a little sick of these f-ing riddles. Now, where is the school bomb?
Yep.
So I think it's great the way that they do this here.
The juxtaposition of the very calm intellect. He's not in a rush because he knows he doesn't have to. Whereas John is running around like a madman. I mean, it goes with the villain, you know, it goes with that encapsulated sort of I'm in control of everything. And John is running around like a nut doing his Bruce Willis yelling. And it's amazing.
Yes. Okay. So now as an English teacher, I'm going to ask you, what do you know the origin of the word riddle?
Of which?
The word riddle.
Riddle. No.
Okay. Do you know the definition of a riddle?
Well, a riddle is a word puzzle. So a riddle is mostly based on a play on words. So the easiest way to figure out a riddle is it's going to be a puzzle that has to do with, in some way, this is going to be a clunky definition, but more often than not, a riddle will rely on the player's knowledge of multiple meanings on words. And some riddles, it depends on the form they appear. Like some have to be visual. Like you have to look at the word. Some of them, if you hear it, you're not going to know which version of the word is being used. But the idea is that it's an intellectual puzzle. The only way you're going to understand a riddle is if you understand the meanings, the variable meanings of words.
Yes. Okay. Great. So a riddle is a statement, question, or phrase having a double or veiled meaning. Put forth as a puzzle to be solved. Riddles are of two types: enigmas, which are problems generally expressed in metaphorical or allegorical language that require ingenuity and careful thinking for their solution, and then there are conundrums, which are questions relying for their effects on punning in either the question or the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm a fan.
I mean, the idea of puzzles go back really, really far. I mean, there are even puzzles in the Bible, if you want to go that back that far.
Mm-hmm.
You have the story of Samson, who gives a bunch of riddles, which I mean, I don't know if you're familiar or not, but
if you told them to me, I might remember them, but I'm not gonna be able to tell you what they are off the top of my head. In fact, what I came up with is the riddles in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which are not the ones that you're referring to.
No.
What is your name?
But exactly. The bottom line is that riddles have been around for thousands of years.
Yes.
You know, the English word riddle hasn't been around as long, but the etymology of the English word is originally it shares its origin with the word reed. They both come from the Germanic verb ridana, which means to interpret or guess. And then from the verb came the West Germanic noun redistli, which means thing to be guessed or thing to be interpreted.
And see, and even there I got lost, because when you said reed, I went to R-E-E-D, like the reed of a musical instrument or the reed of a plant.
No.
And then when you talked about
reed something.
Yep, R-E-A-D. So even then I got screwed up.
That's okay.
Too many variables. And I will always go for the wrong one.
Well, that makes sense.
Yep. I know you're shocked.
Completely. That's the way I am. Also. So again, John is a little upset here. And then Simon goes, temper, John. The road to truth has many turns. You will find an envelope under the rim of the fountain. When you undertake the trip it suggests, ask yourself the question, what is 21 of 42?
Yes.
And then he just hangs up the phone. He doesn't even wait for any type of answer.
He doesn't care.
And he doesn't care. Exactly. And then Targo says to him, we're behind. We should abandon the rest and go. And then Simon responds to him and goes, relax, Targo. And people are going to have to wait till tomorrow to find out why he wants him to relax.
It's true.
Exactly. So that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for the minute?
No, I think we're good. I have this wonderful freeze frame of you know, trying to click through the minute, and this great freeze frame where Torgo is talking to Simon, and this is amazing Jeremy Irons side eye. So that was worth it.
Why not?
I also just love the name Torgo, because, you know, Mystery it's Science
Targo,
Theater.
Targo.
Oh, I like it's Torgo. Argo, I like Torgo better.
We actually talked about it a few weeks ago, that Targo, it comes from the word to like target or bullseye and things like that.
Nah, it's not as much fun. Torgo is a fantastic caretaker for the master in Manos, the Hands of Fate. So I'm going Torgo. His name will be Torgo as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Just to be difficult, that. Rob.
No, you're not being difficult. Not at all. All right. So the script has some interesting stuff here. It says the phone next to the fountain rings. McLean goes to the phone, grabs the receiver. See, again, in the script, it's a payphone. And he goes, yeah, we did it. We hear hands clapping on the phone receiver. And I thought you were stupid, John. But then things are never what they seem, are they? A close on McLean as he listens to Simon laugh. McLean can't articulate it yet, but he's been here before. He has a feeling, a hunch. Simon is on a platform. In the background, dump trucks are filled with gold bullion. Each truck bed is topped with a layer of dirt to cover the gold, then covered with a tarpaulin. And McLean says, a deal's a deal, Simon. What school's the bomb in? Answer this, and you will know. What is 27 out of 43? For the bomb's disarming code, go to New York Public Library and consult card catalog HXQ498. Simon clicks off his phone, smiles. McLean hangs up the phone. He pulls out a pen and records the card catalog number.
Interesting.
Yes.
That would have been more complicated. I'm interested that what you're reading occurs in a previous scene. Like that moment where he hears Simon laughing through the phone is in the payphone scene.
Yes.
Because yes. Tells them
the payphone scene is also very different in the script. Because the
payphone
scene,
interesting.
It wasn't a trick in the script. Mm-hmm. The answer really was 2801 or whatever it was. It wasn't 001.
No, I don't mean that. It was no, it's not. In the script, it's the same riddle.
In the script, back in the with the phone booth.
Yes.
When I was going to St. Ives.
Yeah, I met a man with seven wives. Yeah, answer is always 001.
Not in the script. The original
script is wrong.
Of course, the script is wrong, and they fixed it.
No, I meant that part when he's like when he yells that they were late, and they go diving for the sidewalk. And they can hear him cackling through the phone.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I love it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Amazing.
All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure. Something has happened to them over the course of their lives that is somehow related to being either a revenge or sibling rivalry story. So what have you got for us?
So I am an older sister. My big little brother is 2.5 years younger than me and a good half a foot taller. But, you know, way back when I would pull pranks on him because it was not the kind of person, you know, we didn't physically fight much. Like it would happen a little bit, but not too much. Usually it was just me doing intellectual things to him because I was mean. So we used to share a giant shoebox of crayons. And what I decided to do one day, so we live in we grew up in a Cape style house. So if you go in the front door, which typically you don't, because when you live in a Cape style house, more often than not, you go in the side door, which is at the top of the driveway. But anyway. So if you go in the front door, you've got the stairway upstairs straight ahead of you. And at the top of the stairs on the right is one bedroom. The bathroom will be across from you and is another bedroom to the left. So my bedroom was to the right, the bathroom in the middle, my brother's bedroom to the left. And what I somehow figured out and decided to do was that I could rig the shoebox of crayons above his door by balancing the shoebox partly on the top of the door and partly on the door frame so that when he opened the door, the box of crayons would land on his head and spill everywhere. And I did this more than once. I kept doing this to him and he kept falling for it, which was, you know, I'm sure he was pretty angry about that because of course I never helped him clean up all of the crayons. So there came a point when he got the bright idea that he was going to do it to me. So one day I'm going up the stairs to my bedroom. Now, this is where he failed, because in going up the stairs to the bedroom, my bedroom being at the top of the stairs, you look up where you're going and my direct line of sight was to the top of my door where I could see the box of crayons. So I took the box down without it falling on me and I put it over his door and he fell for it again. And these are the kinds of things that I did to him. And yeah, in that moment, he kept waiting for me to do it and didn't think to check for himself. So it fell on him. What I also did with the doors, you know, the doors open inward to the rooms. So his door opens into his bedroom. The bathroom door opens into the bathroom. So I took some shoelaces and I tied the shoelaces from the bathroom door to his door. And I tied them tightly enough and short enough so that when he went to open his door, the bathroom door would close and he wouldn't be able to get his door open enough so he could leave the room.
You were a mischievous sister.
I was a diabolical little thing. Yes. Yes. I did some pretty, like, I didn't really physically harm him, but I kind of psychologically messed with him quite a bit. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, those are great stories. Thank you very much.
We are on good terms, too. We're on very good terms now, but it's like that's always one of the big stories that comes up, the crayon box.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. So, Lisa, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Lisa Leahy?
Sure. You can find me in any of, well, not any of, you can find me at the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. I am on a show called Pictures and Conversations, which is the Rabbit Hole Podcast Book Club. We release episodes on the 20th of every month. And Jason Soto and I are gifting each other horror films as they pertain to the selected subgenre of the day in The Gift of Horror. And we hope that you'll check them out.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can also send me an email if you want to movierobminute@movierob.net. So Lisa, do you feel like coming back tomorrow to finding out that maybe finding out what 21 to 42 is? Maybe?
I think I need to find out. I can't leave these riddles unfigured.
Okay. Great. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.